Blog Talk Radio.
Your boy SP the Ghost, LOX D Block, and you are checking out Real Radio, because the radio is real. Fuck with us, tune in, make sure you play it, tell a friend and tell a friend. Real Radio, SP the Ghost, LOX D Block, yeah.
And we're hot. Good morning, everybody. What's going on? It's Saturday, the 5th of March. It is the very first Saturday of the month of March. Where is the year going already? We're going to look up pretty soon. It's going to be June. And we all going to be talking about how hot it is. But right now, we still saying it's cold. It's cold outside. This week, we're going to have the counter to last week. The gentlemen will have an opportunity to speak out, and talk about their experiences in the dating world. This is something that I hope not completes the circle, because we actually need to get everybody together. We'll see how that goes. But we need to get serious about this thing if we're going to be serious about this thing. You know, at the end of the day, it's nice to say in the corners how much we need one another. In the beginning of the day, and the middle of the day, and at the end of the day, it's nice to work on the fact and acknowledge the fact that we really need one another. So, you know, the hope is that we have some dialect that really sparks people to do something, not just, you know, sit idly by and allow the other to continue to talk down or talk bad about the other side of the equation. Because, you know, we've all had some rough patches. We've all had some rough times in life, love, and the whole nine. But, you know, we still press on. We still move on. And that's the importance of the affair. And as Rodney is always to say, and will say constantly, you know, it's not only about us, it's about the future, and the future is our children, and making sure that they see healthy, happy, lasting relationship so that they can then engage in similar activities. And then, as Brother Barry has so eloquently said on numerous occasions, we can weaponize this thing about us as loving and really press forward and move stronger as a unit in not only the nation, but also throughout the world. Good morning, Sister Vashi. How are you?
I have just woken up to a 65-degree Kansas City, and I thought personally that I had popped up at the same time, but apparently I popped up 4 hours later than usual. My body demanded its rest and took it.
Oh,
and I can't get mad at all. I cannot get mad at all. Because I am an insomniac. I get about 4 to 5 hours a night, sometimes not even that. And I went to bed last night at 10. And I woke up this morning at 9:45.
Look at you.
And I have no idea. I fell into a cute little mini coma. And it was, you know, recuperative.
And I'm
feeling quite well. It was super cute.
On the side of your mouth.
Well, it was a little bit induced. I ain't going to tell you about this half a pint of rum I got here. But what it did do was I laid horizontal so long that my gout ain't been flared back down. And I can feel the knuckle bone on my ankle. So it was recuperative. And I am glad for it, you know, that my body, because I'm so damn, that the brain is so done with the body that it won't even tell the body to go to sleep. You know what I'm saying? Or vice versa. So when your body decides, hey, listen, we decided down here we're going to make this decision independent of what y'all got going on up there. I just appreciate my body for going on ahead and getting handling, you know, its business without me.
I call that a TBS, a total body shutdown. And I'm telling you, it is one of the best boots that you can get.
And I don't understand why I forced myself into that, but we can talk about that some other day, why we force our bodies to shut down.
Mm. Ronnie Wu, what's up, family?
Me, because if I hear you all talking about 9 o'clock and blah, 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 it's 8:05 right here. So I actually would still like to be asleep, but it's always good to be with you and Sister Rossi. Hit this hot topic today, since we had a hot topic last week from sort of the women's side of it, even if this is the beginning of Women's History Month, let the fellas in and have their say.
That's right. God
That's
dang
all
it.
They want to do anything. Anyway, Rodney, all we want to do is sit back and listen to men folk give up secrets. That's a perfect Women's History Month.
is that really a gift?
Yes, it's a cheat sheet.
Okay.
Because we don't get very many. Y'all get quite a few cheat sheets when it comes to women. But we really, the nature of the male psyche is so encrypted. Really give us a lot of secrets. We have to catch it when y'all get done hiding. So when y'all finally are not angry, but you're willing to kind of give up a little bit of the intel that it takes to be harmonious, live harmonious. Whether you're a husband or a father or, you know, whatever it takes, we have to listen because y'all don't tell us that often what it takes to be happy with y'all.
Maybe it's not because there's that much to say that they don't already know. Besides, the last time I looked at their instruction book, it was like 10,000 pages thick. And when I looked at ours, it was like half a page. I mean, what makes us happy?
10,000 pages thick with footnotes, cleft notes, and all. You got to reference this. It's like, God dang.
And that was in
a DVD that you put in for support intel. I got you.
Exactly. Hey, it was a 10 pitch font on that, too.
Yeah, for real. You talking, ooh, good Lord. And there's 10 you can fit all kinds of words on that page.
I reject that idea that men are less complicated. I just only believe that you are less verbal in the moment about your needs. You are willing because you hold so much social power, so much social currency. You willing, you know what I'm saying, to just be quiet about the matter because people in power don't do a whole bunch of complaining. The complaining is for the minions, you know?
Mm. Well, that social currency is something that's definitely debatable as black men holding social currency in white America. Not so sure social scientists would agree with that part at all. But because we are male, so there's definitely a male-dominant society. That doesn't mean that we're the dominant ones in that. But, yes, it is a male-dominant society, no doubt.
Mm. Speaking of male domination and playing with our phallus, so
we were talking about
Ukraine
that?
Invasion. Yeah, we were, because you know that's the male dominant
that
tool that the male dominant tool that women go to. But anyhow, Russia is still attacking the Ukraine. Now we all thought, well, not we all, Roddy and I thought this thing was gonna be over by now. I ain't gonna lie.
Yep.
I didn't think the Ukraine.
Yep.
I didn't think they had a chance. So, you know, for them staving off this invasion, this total takeover this long, it's a testament to their resolve, their fighting men and women, and their resilience, without a doubt. I mean, I really thought this thing was going to be over in a matter of days. The Russians came to the table.
Like a doctor, right? And Russia is like a 75-year-old man. Ukraine got like 7 people in broken up uniforms, and Russia has like the 5/5 faction military. So technically, we are talking about you know, a daycare being stomped down by a multifaceted university.
Correct, correct. Yeah, that's a good analogy. And but Russia came to the table, granted roads of departure for civilians to get out of the war zone. I thought that was a power move by Ukraine to do that. But the Russians got really close to a nuclear power plant just the other day. That was not a good look at all, not only for those who are centered in this fight, but, you know, quite possibly for the rest of the world. I mean, if they hit this freaking nuclear plant and it went nuclear, you know, that could have been catastrophic for a whole lot of people, including those back in Russia. So I don't know how much the sanctions have really hit the Russian people. I don't know how much the sanctions are really touching Putin, because the Russians had a lot of money that wasn't ruble. I mean, they were wise enough to divest their money and put it into other currencies before they...
reading that nuclear power is the allure of the Ukraine. It was like the third largest, according to one of the authors of the article I read, the Ukraine had the third largest stockpile of that type of war based technology. So that may be the reason.
I'm sorry, but you have it conflicted. So they gave up their nuclear weapons a long time ago. I'm talking about a nuclear power plant. They had the largest nuclear power plant in Europe, according to my reading. So I get that. And, you know, that could be very beneficial to the Russians and the Russian economy in general. But, you know, again, whether it be weapons or a power plant, it doesn't matter. It's still a nuclear reactor. Had that nuclear reactor gone kapooey, for lack of a better term, it could have very well caused a boatload of deaths, you know, into the tens of thousands for a long period of time. So, you know, that's just not a good look at all. And I don't know if someone got the wrong orders, someone was just being too zealous or what, but it just puts a different dynamic on war. You know, when we went into Afghanistan, when we went into Iraq, there wasn't a whole lot of talk about damage to or near nuclear power facilities. This go around, it's a different look. You know, Europe is not the Europe of old. America is not the America of old. Asia is not the Asia of old. We all now pretty much are running off of nuclear power to some degree in almost every country. So if we're talking the potential, and I'm not foreseeing this in the future, but if we're talking the potential of World War III, you know, that's a different dynamic that you have to consider as a planner, as a field general, as a field commander, so on and so forth. However, I was thinking about this a couple of days ago, and Rodney, this is specifically to you. This is the second time that we've had the benefit, and it may seem harsh to say a benefit, but the military reality is it's a benefit. A benefit of seeing the Russian fighting men and women in action and in very recent times. So when they went into, where did they go into first? Georgia? When they went to Georgia, yeah, there were really no shots fired, right? However, you still saw troop buildup, so on and so forth. So you have that as a baseline. So now you see them in action this go around. These are actual shot fired. Now you have an opportunity to compare those movements to these movements and then contrast and build upon your theories of what they would do if the don't, right? I say that it sounds harsh to say that it's a benefit or a luxury, because it is, because you know, people are dying. Things are being destroyed. People's lives will never be the same. However, if you are a military, a U.S. or NATO military planner, you are salivating at the bit right now because you're getting all kinds of intel that you could only but theorize 10, 12, 13 months ago. You could only but theorize these things. You could only say, well, if they do this, this means that, da, 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 da. Now you see, again, twice in a matter of years, that short years, by the way, that if they do this, this means that. And you can really put that together and plan for a counterattack. And I say all of that because I've said this, and I'll continue to say it. The world is preparing for war. You know, between what China is doing, we already see the aggression that Russia's doing. The only ones that are sitting back chilling, once again, is us. America's the only one sitting back chilling, talking about we don't need to do this, we don't need to do that. Everybody else is preparing. They're hardening their defenses. They're hardening their mobile capabilities. And though we're spending some money, we're not getting our people ready for what quite possibly is on the very near horizon. Go ahead, Rashi.
Brother Lee, is he trying to reunite the USSR?
Yes.
Is he trying to rebuild what was destroyed in the late, I believe that would have been the early 90s, maybe late 80s?
Yes. Yes. That is his goal.
Not just the Ukraine, not just Crimea.
Correct.
Not just Georgia, any land that was what a part of the Ottoman Empire. What is he trying?
That means Czech, which became a separate country from Slovakia. That means Slovakia. That means Poland. Hell, if you really want to stretch it, that means some portions of Germany. You know what I'm saying? Where the Russian language is spoken, and this is real. Like, this dude, and you know, Rodney, I don't know if you see an exit strategy, but I don't know what it's going to take to stop this dude other than a bullet in the head, real talk, or a bunker bomb, or
you don't see
straight
there
up
is no
the
he, there are no,
no.
council of thinkers,
no.
advisors. There is no one in
No. He is an autocrat. There's nobody, nobody that advises him to change his mind. He is the dude. He is the alpha and the omega. No. Nobody. And he doesn't give a shit about the Russian people. He doesn't. Because if he did, we wouldn't be here right now. Because the sanctions aren't hitting him.
They got that nation back online. This is a nation they used to line up for bread, okay? This is a nation that they showed that had, when they start showing pictures of Russia back in the day, they damn near had imported some African flies so that they could crawl on the Russian mouths, too. They was that poor. So now we're talking about a nation that is no longer poor, right? Not like that. At least not visibly poor to the outside. If they are, they refuse to allow that kind of media and footage outside. So we don't get to see that anymore. We see him naked, half naked on a horse. We see the military videos. We really don't get to see a lot of what is Russia like anymore. But I was under the impression that since it had turned into a not communist but socio-capitalist nation, that what we were looking at was essentially like what happens with money, Western influence.
Mm-hmm.
You open up the money, and you open up the pathways to various cultures as well. And in those cultures, you start taking on some of that thinking that one man cannot do this. It takes a council. It takes an advisory panel to make any real decisions for a group of people. And even if it's a tribe in sub-Saharan Africa, it's not no one dude. It's him, his brothers or cousin from the, you know, it's a panel of people.
Not in Russia. Not in Russia. And my last point before I shut up and let Rodney get in, I was watching a documentary just the other day about Patton. And I love General Patton. I've always loved General Patton. I thought he was just a ruthless SOB, you know, but he was the type of person that you needed at the time. I also loved him because he played his position. He knew he wasn't a politician. He wasn't trying to be a politician. He knew that his lot in life was to be a soldier on the battlefield. And because of that, America was better. But he said several times that this was going to happen, that Russia was going to be a problem, and nobody wanted to listen to him. You know, and sadly, this man lost his life. Under some very weird circumstances, but he lost his life, and still nobody.
But what was his evidence for that? What was his evidence for him telling us to heighten our? I mean, other than they had declared that, you know, themselves as a communist nation back when we had that whole Red Scare thing. Why would he be watching Russia?
Because he was a military tactical genius. He saw what the Russians were doing. He saw what part of Europe they decided to conquer and why. He understood that they took over lands that gave them access to seaways, which would give them further access now and in the future to their naval support, their naval vessels, in order to branch out and potentially take over Europe. And with Germany out of the way, France beat down, Belgium beat down, who would stand in their way? Would stand in their way. They were the last country standing. They were the last country standing. Their military might was unmatched by anybody else at that time because of what Germany went through, because of what France went through under German occupation. The UK was depleted. The UK got their asses. Germany whipped the hell out of the UK. Who was going to stand between them and us? Nobody. He saw it. That's why. Go ahead, Rodney. I'm sorry.
Well, a few things. It's not just about nuclear weapons. Putin taking control of that power plant. It gives him the ability to turn on and off power to a whole bunch of people in a key region that he's trying to take. And it's the weather is pretty cold there. So that is a huge advantage when you make a large group of people's lives miserable and turning off light and power in general. That's one reason for taking the nuclear power plant. Also, once that power plant was taken, now he has the option. If he wanted to make a dirty bomb, not by causing a nuclear reactor to go off, but there is nuclear material that could be used to make the biggest, dirtiest bomb in history. So, and that's without exploding the nuclear power plant. And that puts all of Europe, and depending on the wind, you know, potentially America in harm's way. So him, first of all, even being willing to shoot at a nuclear power plant is shows a certain level of craziness that he was firing. And now that he has it, the cruelty that he has is just like amazing. And then when you talk about, you know, you have Ukraine, which gave up its nukes that we promised them in return for them giving up their nukes, that we would protect them. Now, Russia signed on to that agreement, America, the United Kingdom, et cetera. And, of course, Russia has broken that agreement. And so what does America's promise, what does America's word mean? Giving up those nukes, the third largest nuclear power in the world was Ukraine. And Ukraine gave those up to be admitted into the European community. And now the European community is saying, man, you guys are fighting really courageous, and we're going to keep supplying you as long as we can before Russia stops us from doing it. But once Russia stops us from doing it, you know, you're on your own. And so for me, just knowing that and seeing this take place, it does make me wonder what is America's word worth? And moving forward, assuming that we make it through this, the next time America makes a promise to somebody after we have consistently broken, why would anybody want to believe it?
Honestly, I don't think there has ever been a kept American promise. I ain't even trying to be funny. I don't think, not to the Native Americans about them deals, not even to the Europeans who came to America funded by the British people. They didn't even keep their promise. They broke off and made America. There has never been a kept American promise, Mr. Rodney.
Well, I don't know about never, but you did cite some important ones. But there's been many times where we have kept our promise. And so the thing is, are the American people willing to fight now, or are they going to be forced to fight later? So that, because right next
to the Cold War just froze over. Oh my God, I live to see the Cold War pop back up.
Oh no.
No, this ain't a Cold War.
This is not a Cold War. Yeah.
This is a hot war.
Yeah, this is kinetic. So but
yeah, when bullets start flying, that's hot.
Yeah, there lies the predicament though. For example, Lee, to your point earlier, decades ago, the United States military knew that Russia was more of a paper tiger when it, in comparison to us. As a matter of fact, when the Soviet Union broke up and those generals started coming over here, and they actually got a chance to see our military might up close, even they knew that they were no match for us militarily. They're actually no match for us in a nuclear war. But the problem is we'd still both destroy, you know, we would destroy all of them, and they would, you know, the world would be in a really bad place. But as far as the traditional war, we've known for decades that we could take Russia. Heck, they're having problems taking Ukraine, and their Air Force is having problems, right? Our Air Force, we could establish a no-fly zone. But if we establish a no-fly zone, does it go from now we're at war with Russia, and what would that mean? Would we be able to cause the bully to back down, or would the bully, assuming that his mind isn't right for him to make this move in the first place, you know, go and, you know, he still possesses the red button. That's the reason why we didn't want 45 to be the president, because he had access to the red button.
Authority.
There's protocol.
Have we been at war? Have we been in soft war this whole time? Have we really been just kind of watching them, you know, inch here and then we inch there? Has this been like, what is, not Stratego, what's the battleship? Have we been in a battleship type situation this whole time where we're kind of silently watching the third only nation that could do, you know, China and Russia, right?
That can do what?
That can get into military fights that affect the whole world, like you say, where the world would be in a really bad place.
Well,
it's just us three, right? It's just us three. Am I wrong?
Well, I'm not sure if I quite understand the question, but
as nations who have power enough, military strength and power, making maneuvers silently and overtly, right? It would seem that there's only three to me, United States, China, and Russia. Am I wrong?
Nah, I don't see it that way. I mean, you got India and Pakistan. For that matter, you have Iran and North Korea. So there's multiple because of nuclear power and because
Israel.
Of the power of their military forces.
But the United States controls Israel's, you know, military.
No, the United States don't control Israel.
No.
It might be the other way around, but the United States don't control Israel. Here's the reality. Remember, when the Nazis went into Poland, which was, you could sort of say that was Hitler's, well, it's actually the same playbook that he's using now. It was really the same thing. He was going in to protect these German-speaking people, right? And just like Putin says, he's going in to protect these Russian people. Well, when you use a pretext like that, there's Russian-speaking people all over the world. So if that truly is his, you know, line, then that means he could come over here too and say, I'm going to cut out this area because there's ethnic Russians here. So that pretext is false from the very beginning. Not to mention that if he was to take Ukraine, or when he takes Ukraine, he's already been in Chechnya, he's already done Georgia, he's done Crimea, which that was a huge mistake on our part, I would submit, because that destabilized the Middle East, right? And now it's coming back to haunt us because if he didn't have Crimea, he would not be able to get his naval forces into the position that he's currently in. So big mistake. So he has incrementally taken more and more territory. When a government takes territory and is allowed to get away with it, then there's nothing to stop them from taking more. He's always wanted Ukraine. We've known he's wanted Ukraine, but Ukraine don't want him. And that's the thing. Ukraine does not want him. Ukraine is a European nation heading towards democracy, and they would have been a great democracy. But now that this has happened, at some point, Russia is going to attack its Ukraine's eastern border. Western border. And when it does that, then the allies who have been supplying Ukraine have to make a decision. Do they shut it down?
They have to engage at that point.
Well, do they shut it down, or do they engage? But here's the other thing, Sister Rashi. Since we know he's taking territory and he wants to reclaim the land possessed by the former Soviet Union, if he was to take Ukraine, he is right. There's Poland right next to Belarus and the top of Ukraine. Then you have Lithuania, part of NATO. You got Latvia, that's a part of NATO. He's already made threats to Sweden. And like Lee said, remember East Germany was called East Germany because it belonged to Russia. And he went into Poland right after the Nazis went into Poland and claimed it. So why wouldn't he, if just using his talking point, that would be his next step? And then what is NATO, Europe, and America going to do then? Say, well, no, we're not going to engage because we don't want to, you know, directly have kinetic contact with Russia. Russia may use its nukes. Well, we've already told them that we're not willing to establish a no-fly zone, even on the part of the Ukraine that Russia is not actually in yet, which is that western border. And this is what I'm looking to see, is if NATO or the European Union, maybe the European Union, establishes some type of no-fly zone or try to cut that one particular piece of Ukraine from the rest of it. Because if not, I just don't know if we can supply enough weapons fast enough and train the Ukrainians fast enough to use it to stop the bear that's coming to them. But there's no doubt in my mind that if we wanted to fight them, minus the nukes, that we could fight them and expel them out of Ukraine, and we can definitely take their Air Force. We can take their Navy. Heck, ultimately, we can take their Army too, because a lot of them would probably give up. But are we as a people, as a country, who've been in a war in Afghanistan, poorly executed after we initially won it, we wound up losing it like we lost Vietnam, are the American people willing to send their greatest treasures, their son and daughters, overseas once again to fight on behalf of another people? That's the part that I don't know. That's the part that I think the president and the secretary of state is kind of building up to, because they know once he gets into Ukraine, he's going into Poland, and Poland is a part of NATO.
But Rashi,
we have one of our guests on, so I don't want to go too deep into this and not let him in. So say what you need to say, and we'll transition out. I just wanted to let you know what's going on.
Sorry, I guess I was looking for Russian resistance. In any war within a country, we had our own anti-Vietnam resistance. We had our own anti-Persian Gulf resistance. There's no, have you all heard or do you know of anything within the nation, or have they drunk the Kool-Aid like the Germans did during World War II?
So a quick answer.
You're talking about within America?
Both. She's talking about in Russia. And in Russia, there is resistance, but remember, it is an authoritarian nation. So the people truly have no rights. They have cut off Facebook, Twitter, YouTube. They've cut off news organizations from many of them from broadcasting out of Russia. So what he's done is he lied to his people, a la 45, to tell them that this is not a war. This is a special mission to protect ethnic Russians. And so that's what he gave them to start off with. His media campaign has supported that. And now that he's shut off external news sources, and he's even shut off internal news sources, shut many of them down, and especially foreign journalists, that there are many people in Russia today, just like there are many people in America today, that believe in the lost cause, that believe in Trumpism, that believe in QAnon conspiracies, because that's what they've been fed. So if you talk to many Russians, even who have children who are fighting this special mission, because that's what they call it, they don't call it a war. If you talk to many of them, they will say it's Ukraine that is actually bombing its own people It's Ukraine that's destroying its own cities. It's Ukraine that attacked its own power plant to get at Russia. And that's the, you know, when we see this happening, it's almost a mirror of looking at America when you think of the misinformation and disinformation that's going on here. So the answer to your question is yes, there are dissidents in Russia, but they're quickly rounded up and taken away. And unless millions rose up or the military rose up, he will be the authoritarian that he is and keep his people in the dark and keep doing what he's doing.
All right, let's shelve that and come back because there's quite a bit more we can add into that conversation. I want to invite everybody again. You know, if you're on and you want to have your say in the conversation, hit the number one so I know you want to speak up. If not, then just sit back and listen. Again, hit the number one. I'll let you, that lets you know that you are interested in having your say in the conversation. And I got my man Sheroy on, but Rashi, I think I got a special gift for you. This is a person that you've been asking for some time, and he got a little bit of time today, so let's see what's going on. What's up, cousin?
What's going on?
How you doing,
cousin?
Brother? How y'all doing?
What's going on, Rashi? That's cuz right there. That's big.
What?
What's going on,
don't
man?
Don't make me cry. What happened? I miss you so much.
I miss you too, baby. How you doing?
Better now, brother. Have you seen this world spin since you have been able to join us?
I have definitely been, like everybody else, you know, watching the world spin. I've just been really just trying to find my place in it, man. We've been, over the last 5 to 10 years, we've been very displaced as a culture. And so, yeah, I've definitely been watching this thing. But it's good to be on the show today, man. I miss y'all. It's good to hear y'all voices, man. I always love what y'all do.
That's what's up. So after that, that's what's up. Welcome home. Welcome home, cuz. Sheroy, what's up, family?
How you doing, Lee? I'm good, man. How's everybody doing?
Everybody's well. Say hello to Rashi.
Hey, brother. Coming in real clear.
Okay.
That's good.
Brother Rodney's on with us as well. Now, you know, we wanted to give the perspective of men and dating here lately. And we had the women's speech last week. And there's a couple of things that I really wanted to hit on. You know, first off, if you're on social media as a female and every picture you have is of your head and shoulders and that's it, you fat, just say it and just let it be. We all know you're a big girl. Stop trying to hide it. It's okay. Sheroy like big girl. Sheroy love big woman. That's the thing. It's okay.
You fat or you in a wheelchair.
Look, you're in a wheelchair. It is what it is, but, you know. Just don't try to hide the fact that you're a big girl. Like, I know you're a big girl. We know you're a big girl. Just let it out. I don't understand.
Embrace
your bigness. Embrace your beauty. It's okay. It's okay. Some of us like that. No, I'm not your baby father. So, stop texting me all damn day long because it's annoying. I'm done for right now. Go ahead, Sheroy. What you got?
Well, I think we all live in a fantasy world too much with all these filters and stuff. And even with what you're saying, with only showing part of yourself, we need to start being real again. Women need to understand.
What does that look like, being real? What does that look like?
Well, I would like to start with saying honesty, but that's hard to get to because you can't always tell women the truth.
Mm.
Ooh.
Mm.
They like to compliment all the time.
Can we not tell the truth, or is it that we choose not to tell the truth? Because we always have choices, right?
Right.
And I think because of the way we conform to certain elements of society, we choose not to be honest. and deal with the consequences of our honesty if we choose to not tell the truth. You know, I have learned that it's always beneficial for me to find a way to be as honest as possible of what I see and what I feel about my meat. You know, and there's a difference, I think, between being, you know, insensitive about how you feel and being truthful about how you feel.
Listen to you and all grown up. Listen to you. Listen to you. Now, Rocky, you're about to make me cry. But at the same time, to Sheroy's point, some people can't handle the truth. And, you know, that's not just a movie line. It's the absolute God's honest truth. They don't want to hear it. They only want to hear the fluff. And even if you give them the truth, they either won't believe you, or they believe that they can do, they can change your perspective. And that is just as big of a dagger as being untruthful is, and later on discovering that you were untruthful, in my opinion. Go ahead, Sheroy. What else have you got with wanting to hear the truth?
Well, I think, you know, even though you know you want to have a persona of yourself, you need to share that with people because, you know, then when you get the awakening that somebody think you were this way, and then you are listening to somebody that you respect more that finally tells you the truth, then you go to the other person and say, well, why didn't you tell me? Because they're not waiting to accept it.
Okay. I got some more questions. Do you all not want to be serious with someone or marry? Yes or no? Be serious or marry. It doesn't matter. Yes or no? Do you not want to be serious with someone or marry?
I'd rather be serious because there's too much games and we're getting older. I'm already cross 50, so how much more time I have to play?
So you say women play games?
Even if I want to play games, let's be serious about that so that we are not confused in what we're doing.
So you're saying women play games?
All the time. Come on.
All
the time.
I'm just asking questions. That's my job. My job is to ask questions. I'm just saying. Because I mean, do you want to be serious or get married or be married?
You said, do I
want to
be serious or be married, right?
Or be married, yes, or be married with someone.
So as you know, I am married.
Right.
So I would definitely. I believe in marriage, right? That was my point. Right, you know, man. I believe in it. You know what I'm saying? I believe in marriage, and I believe in everything that's good about marriage. But I also recognize the pitfalls that occur during marriage, right? And typically those pitfalls that occur during marriage come surrounded by honesty, surrounded by honesty or in communication. And it goes back to something that my man said a moment ago about us being, you know, not wanting to communicate our honest opinions and our honest feelings is like kind of supporting us being fake in our culture and being fake in our relationships. So, and if you take it serious, you won't spare somebody's feelings just simply because they don't want to hear the truth. You won't just spare somebody's feelings and say what they want to hear. And that's like, you know, you all were talking about the military, right? One thing I did not like as a soldier was if I felt like I was being set for failure on a mission, right? So if my mission as a husband or as a partner is to see you win and see you succeed, I can't lie to you, withhold the truth from you. I got to give it to you. And I got to give it to you in the best way, in the most effective way possible. Because whether women play games or not, you know, men, we're supposed to be the leaders of our relationships. So we're the leaders of the household and leaders of relationships. We can't simply just, you know, allow our partners to fall short. We have a responsibility to continue to lead. And sometimes, you know, giving those honest truths, you know, it's difficult. But as a leader, that's what you got to do. You got to make those hard choices, have those tough conversations, whether they want to hear it or not. And it might change what you're going to be married later on or not. You know what I'm saying? But at least I know I gave you my honest effort. And after that, the chips may fall away,
You said that men lead in relationships. Do we choose, or do you feel that we choose, or women choose us, and then it's a give and take as far as the leadership is concerned? Because, you know, if they choose us, then in effect they're leading in the relationship in the beginning, and then eventually we take over the reins and then continue the course.
Right.
Is that how you see it, or you see it differently?
Absolutely. If you look at, the biggest rulers in the world, right, in ancient times, the women, they led starting off. Most of the wars, the kingdoms were cultivated by women. Like you said, with men, we end up coming in, we exercise our dominance and stuff like that. We exercise our, we want to be pacified as men, so we got to go ahead, we put ourselves, or we are put in positions of and that there lies a partnership. So by rule of hierarchy, we become the leaders. But the fact of the matter is, the initial team is created by women. So yeah, I do definitely believe that we're selected by women. Women have that power that about themselves, where we have to be selected by them. We don't select women at all. We have to be selected by women in order for us to be held accountable
I do agree with you because we've always known that women know who they want to be with before you even meet them. They choose more than we do. You're not going to get a woman that don't want you. I don't care how good you are as a man. When a woman don't want you, you might be able to provide for her, and she'll be in a position for you. But if she doesn't want you, you'll never have her. And we always, since the dawn of time, has done everything for a woman. So inadvertently, they lead. But we're the front men. How they want the house, what kind of house, everything. We are just the front men. We're the general in the field, but they're the general at home. And orchestrating the life.
I have to ask. Okay, I've been listening. I just need to ask. You have an opinion, right? You like red walls, not blue walls. Do you say? Can't you say I don't like these girly ass covers you got on the bed?
No.
Can't you say I don't eat tofu?
Hell
can't
yeah.
you tell her?
No.
Tell her you don't like them kind of movies.
No.
Tell her
I
you
just...
don't like blonde wigs. Tell her. Tell her.
Yeah.
I agree, but I disagree because, unfortunately, I've been married twice. Some women will hear what you say only to go behind your back and do whatever they want. So you have to deal with the individual. It's not always – everybody's not the same, and I can only speak on my experience. Sometimes saying these things only – might end the argument but create more discomfort down the road. I have told my first wife which room she has full control over because we've had that kind of interaction. And then she'll go back, well, I'm in the house more than you, so I'll choose what I want. And different types of stuff like that. So in telling something, some people are... as in like a house, women feel they have more control. They control the house and what goes where and how it's decorated and stuff like that. With your opinion and clashing tastes, you're not going to win, even if you tell her.
So does she keep you slaving in the field to pay for it?
You're going to pay for it anyway.
What Rashi asked was, should we not say it, right? Me voicing my opinion doesn't mean that it's guaranteed that my opinion is going to be heard or we're going to be done my way.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? But at least you know where I stand. And that's my point. If I don't tell you who I am, what I am, what I like, what I don't like, that's where resentment comes into play.
Mm-hmm.
I've been married a couple of times as well. You know what I'm saying? And what I learned through those in my first marriages, I didn't exercise that. I didn't share
who I am, I thought that I was supposed to just kind of exist and live by that concept of, well, this is her room. She's going to decorate the bedroom belongs to the woman. No, right? If I'm sharing that space, I need to have at least give my input. And if it doesn't work out in my favor, it doesn't work in my favor. But I also know how to pick my battles. So I might give up the room, but the living room is mine. Like everyone knows in the house, the living room is mine. Couch is mine. The TV size belongs to me. I choose the TV. As I come in the room, you put the remote down. Like everybody know that. But when it comes down to the bedroom, you know what I'm saying? When it comes down to the bedroom, whatever, you know, color sheets my wife wants, that's what she is. That's the compromise aspect of.
He said whatever makes her feel good. You know what I'm saying? Whatever get her in the right mindset is what he needs in that bedroom. Every room should be tailored. Every room, your family, your community, there should be a room for people who ain't even there. There should be space because you know how we are in this struggle. There should be a space in your life for your cousin to sleep on the couch because that's where we are in this nation. This, brothers, can I ask y'all a question? Because when the subject is dating, right? And me and Lee have this running joke that the art of courting and dating, because I've been explained that they're two different things. No one has told me when dating goes to courting. I said it's when you drop them draws. Nobody agreed with me. So my question to you is, when did you go from dating to courting? What is the line in the sand?
Yeah, men definitely going to have a different response to that typically. I think that I kind of agree with you emotionally, right? You know, theoretically, it's a process. You know, courting for me would be the first interaction, right? It's like, you know, the peacock strutting, got the dagger on, you know, the feathers out, you know what I'm saying, trying to show what you got and trying to show who you are and trying to get the attention. That's the courting aspect of it. Then once it moves from the posturing and showing you, you know, who I am and trying to get you, and trying to draw you in, that goes into the dating. A lot of times in our culture now, that immediately jumps from the feather, you know, popping to dropping the drawers. And a lot of times, you know, again, that process is really fast. So I would agree with you that now it's like, it's more of the dropping the drawers aspect. Again, especially when it comes down to women, because once you drop the drawers, hey, you're my man now. There is no more courting. Like, we dating now. Your ass belongs to me. And no ifs, ands, or buts about it.
Sherelle, go ahead and answer that, and then I'm gonna jump in, and I know Rodney gonna jump in on this bit. So go ahead and answer
that. I think in most cases he's right. But I have had experience opposite where I was ready and they was like, I'm just kicking it, you know. So I'm like, to some point that you feel
they wanted your roast,
you know, that got me in trouble that I don't cook no more. Cooking has been a problem. I don't tell them I can cook no more. But anyway, when you go past that intimacy and it gets to the point where there's several emotions coming about. If you're not honest about that when it happens, in my experience, you'll have problems down the road. So for me, what I do is I identify it in myself first, and I will say, well, I'll express to them, I'm having these feelings that I may need to discuss with you when I sort them out. But, you know, something kind of feeling some kind of way. I just want you to be on point when I bring it up to discuss it to know where we're going. And I always think you should always have a conversation when there's any confusion in your mind about any situation with whoever you're dealing with. I'm confused. Might not be able to sort it out now, but this is why I'm confused. Sometimes taking too long to address something can make it too worse. Because somebody might see what you're going through and assume something, and they'll go running with it as well, and you run in the opposite direction. And when you finally address it, you're on a different page.
So you said something that was very important. So don't allow assumptions to consume time. I've gotten in trouble on social media because y'all know me. I talk shit, right? So I'm very cautious about who I allow on my social media accounts. And I usually preface, you know, if we're going to be friends, male, female, doesn't matter. Yo, you need to understand that these are just jokes. You know, the information is the real shit. I'm going to give you real information. But me just popping off, writing something real quick, man, 9 times out of 10, I'm just talking shit. That's just what I do. If I'm interested in a young lady, it is very important for me to get to her the understanding that don't take the stuff that I say or the stuff that people say to me on social media if you are following me to heart, because it's just what we do. It's just me talking shit. You dig where I'm coming from? But I want to go back to the courting bit. For me, and I think Rodney will agree, you date in the beginning. Dating is a process of elimination. You date a couple people, you go out with them, you have some fun, some laughs, some hookah, some sippy sip, some eaty eat, whatever. You go to the movies, whatever. You go to Dave and Buster's, do what you do. Then you say, okay, I am more interested in him or her than I am in anybody else. So then you say, okay, to yourself, you get real with yourself. You get in that mirror and you're like, yo, look, as you said, Sharon, you work this out. Any confusion? It's like, okay, look, I'm really feeling her. I'm, you know, everybody else is cool. Yeah, we have a good laugh. We have a good time. But I'm really feeling her. I really want to put my efforts solely into her. And when you do that, then you bring that to whomever she is, or whomever he is, you know, depending on which way your boat flow, but hey, don't matter to me. It is what it is. That's when you go from dating to courting. It's like, yo, look, I was having, you know, we've been having a good time. It's been all cool. But I really want to focus on us. I really want to see where we're going. I really want us to build something together. Are you down? And when you do that, now you move from that dating space where it's sporadic, it's this person, that person, boom, 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 to just you and her, and then you all are moving as a unit trying to get to that next level, which is either marriage or a long-term committed relationship. Rodney, do you agree?
100, and I think that's a part of the dysfunction is that we don't tend to know the difference, and we should teach our children that there is a difference and that there should be a difference, because it's okay to meet people and find out what you like, what you don't like, to get to know a person better, to see if what's up front is what runs deep. That's your dating. And then, you know, the rest of it, you described it right. It's just that I'm not sure if people know that.
And I agree as well. I wanted to say I think that's one of the problems when we are communicating. We don't know which come first, and we don't know which one is which.
No.
Dating and courting.
Stop.
In some people's mind.
Stop. We get fucking confused with relating. That's what happens. You know, you introduce sex into the equation. Rashi said this to her credit a couple weeks ago. What happened to back in the day when you couldn't come forward to a woman without you doing your investigation? And your investigation wasn't your investigation. Your investigation was you came home, you told your brother, sister, cousin, uncle, aunt, whatever. Yo, I like such. They then went out and said, okay, let me find out who their peoples is. They went out, found their peoples, started having conversations, started asking around the neighborhood, your reputation, who you were, blah, blah, blah. They came back, collected that data, gave it to you. Now, you took that data, you processed it, said, okay, I got all this, all that. This is still who I want to be with, and I'm going to pursue that. We don't do that anymore. What happens now is, and, you know, I don't know anybody who's ever done something like this, but I've heard of people like it. I don't know nobody personally. but I heard of people who meet people, they know them for a very short amount of time, the draws get dropped, and then emotions get tied up in. You know what I'm saying? There are some people, male and female, whom can handle the draws getting dropped and still operate as, we're just trying to see where this goes. The majority of people cannot do that. When the draws drop, the moaning, the groaning, the hair pulling, the spiking, I mean, just all these things I've heard of. When these things happen, now you get somebody who, when I'm going to see you again, when we going to do this again, you're going to call me right, you're going to, you know what I'm saying? I mean, you know, I don't know nobody who did this, but I just heard a situation like this. And then it's all confusion. Now later on, you a piece of junk, and, you know, you don't know what you want, and you need to recognize you ain't no real man. You know what I'm saying? All this crazy stuff. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know nobody.
It's not crazy.
I
just want y'all to hear that now. I want y'all to hear what's happening on the other side. We have reduced a date down to a free meal. Some of them, because, you know, I want y'all to hear that.
Say
I don't
that
do it no more. You can't ask me, if you ask me on a date, I think it's offensive. I think you're trying to run game on me. But other women, if you ask her, they like, oh, yeah, I get to eat on Friday at 8 o'clock, okay? Because when you objectify our body sexually, we, in order to not build, like, a great social resentment, we objectify you financially. This is the trade-off. If I am a human object for gratification, you become a human object for subjugation, which is what I call all financial usage. If I'm using you for money in any kind, it's subjugation. Mm. When you get down to the basic of how we treat each other, and all, like Brother Rodney always say, what about the babies? What about the babies? When you get down to the fundamental basics of sexuality and what it takes to be present in the moment, her being on the pill, you using your condom, nobody being swept up in the fantastic moment, as Lee is alluding to. When you get done being swept up in the moment. You ain't never been swept up in the mud. That's right. I forgot. You have no Korean children. I remember that too. When you don't get swept up in the moment.
Stop talking about Ming Ling. You don't put Ming Ling on me. You
be calling
me to this day.
But I'm telling you, this man has Korean children. Anyway, when you get done playing the game, there are humans that get created out of this game, because you put the cart before the horse. You put the sexuality, and it's strong. Man, I think I'm coming from some nun's moment. I've been there. I have actually had a friend who only wanted to sleep on my booty. That, I know that sounds weird. Please don't let it divert the conversation. What I'm telling you is,
but you got a big booty, though, Rashi, there, so I can do that.
It's a big booty. It's a badonk. But the point is, when you get through playing them street games, you look around, and you face your own mortality. Like you said, you only have so much time. You face what most people say, I don't want to die alone. I don't want to die alone. I don't want to die alone. And I don't believe my children are going to be standing around at my my dying corpse saying, please, I need someone to carry my lineage. I need someone to know that I existed. I need someone out there to know that I'm here. That's the force. That's the push to date. That's the push to ask. Because if you just wanted sex, you would get the people who are trained to do that. They're called the honorable day's work. They do a good job. They keep, you know, people who don't have... I believe in sex workers. I am an advocate for sex work because dating is not just looking for somebody to have sex with. Dating is looking for someone to live the rest of your life with, understanding that you only get so much life. When you're out there dating, you're not
You're not supposed to be looking for a gook off. If you're looking for to get that feeling, you masturbate. If you need that feeling with a human connection, you can do sex work. If you need that feeling from someone who loves you, you have to put in the fucking work. What's the work? The work is telling people who you are. Quit playing them games and tell them people that you go to the casino every Friday and give them 30% of your wages. If the work is telling people that you have an Amazon addiction, the work is telling people that you believe that women should be in a certain place in society, and if she don't believe it, she won't agree. If you're a hyper-fundamentalist Muslim Christian, you're not going to allow her to leave that goddamn house. She has to be somebody who agrees on the house. I want to do it. I can't do it. I don't know, brothers. I'm sorry. I'm not staying up in that house for you. I don't care.
So Brother Barry's on.
So let me ask this question. Because sometimes, man, I've read this book. It's called The Mastery of Love. And I believe that that book has helped me navigate these waters a little bit better. And the main thing that he talked about in the book is children are the only people who love purely. Adults don't love purely. Because adults always have an agenda, and that's part of the problem. So you have an agenda, and then you want someone else to be on the same agenda as you. And so it comes with expectations. And expectations is usually where situations start crumbling. Because what I found in this society is we tend to have expectations for others, and we don't have expectations for ourselves. And so it makes it hard to couple when you have people more so trying to get folks to live up to their expectations instead of fighting people that they can cooperate with and build something with, right? And so when I hear what Sister's saying, a lot of times I always say it's always about the negotiation stage. How are you negotiating? Are you a willful negotiator? Do you really have equal to the person that you're trying to negotiate with it? Or is it going to be a hostile takeover? Meaning that person has their stuff together. You're still trying to get your stuff together. Why would they come and deal with something that's dysfunctional when they already have a working function that shows success? Do you want to be taken over like a corporation who says that, no, this person has their books in line or what have you? So you have to really understand yourself more so, have expectations for yourself more so than the other person. And I feel like that's where a lot of the struggle comes from, because we always hear this stuff like, We got this in two. Men hear two different things, in my opinion. We hear, I want a man that's going to do this like my grandfather would have. Yet I'm different than my grandmother, and I want to do this. Right? Mm-hmm. We're hearing two different things. You want a Renaissance man, but you want to be a New Age woman. Well, hold on a second. How you get to change and men don't get to change? So I just say we have to have a conversation where we're talking to each other versus at each other. And I will tell you, for most black men who've gone through a lot, they're not looking for another nanny. They're looking for a partner.
That's true.
Absolutely true. You know what I'm saying? And,
I agree with almost everything you said.
And, you know, there's no fear over here, at least I believe, and gentlemen, please correct me if I'm wrong, that in a strong woman. Are you intimidated by a strong woman, Brother Barry?
No. My ex-wife told me the other day that strong woman comment she feels like was the bane of our relationship, and that she no longer wanted to be looked at as a strong woman, because she understands the things that she took for granted being a strong woman. That she needed from me after we separated. So she feels like that strong woman conversation that we're always placed upon black women, it puts women in a situation where they feel like they can do it alone until they have to do it alone, and they recognize that, hey, when I had help, it was a lot easier for me mentally and emotionally versus the financial aspects. Because everything with us is the strong woman conversation, it really always comes down to food, clothes, and shelter. And really, most of the time, they know if they can't provide it for themselves, the government will.
Cuz, are you intimidated by a strong black woman?
Not at all. I mean, it only becomes a problem when that quote unquote strong nature doesn't mesh well with my manhood. right? Like, cause, so you can be a strong woman and not emasculate you, right? And I think that's the problem that a lot of those relationships endure is the balance between, yeah, you be who you are without taking away from me. That's what I have a problem with, right? And I agree that it does kind of impact the expectations of the woman along the way. But by all means, I'm not intimidated by a quote unquote strong woman.
Sheroy, how about you, bro? You intimidated by a strong black woman?
Not at all.
I'm confused. So I'm just asking the questions, you know.
Well, I think where it brings a problem into relationship, because I've experienced it, but I've never really said I have a problem. Like the gentleman said before, when it starts to try to control your manhood, it becomes a problem. I mean, being more financially able to bring home the bacon and having more degrees and all these things really does not really affect a relationship. That's, like he said, financial, it's maintaining and whatever. But in the interpersonal part of life, none of that comes into play. I'm a man, you're a woman. We have roles to play. And we have to stay in our lane without feeling like, because this makes me in society better than him, I should be doing this. But you're not a man. And same thing with men that now, because their wife make more and they want to stay home and take care of this and do that, it's well and fine, but you're not a woman. Play your role and stay in your lane and as it is, because the way society is now, traditional marriage, as most of us know it, is going to fall apart. Marriage has turned into a business, and it's always been a business since you had to get a license, in my opinion. You have to know in going to your business, what is your role? All right? Lee, you know I've had businesses, so I can say it in a certain way. You might be the manager, floor manager, store manager, whatever it might be. That's your position, and this business could be successful if we are proficient, stay in our lane, do what we're supposed to do. If you feel you need help or you feel your partner needs help, you offer it. You don't take over, because then that person can't do what they need to do for themselves.
Gotcha.
So
who determines the lane? Who picked the lane? Who determines whose lane? What is a lane?
Yeah.
He just said that this lane stuff, that lane stuff is malignant. And let me tell you why.
No.
It's not about a lane. It's about who is more cognizant and proficient with the ideas and what's happening in the moment than the other. If you're at the mechanic and he's better proficient with the car, he's in charge. When you're at the grocery store and she knows the price of a gallon of milk, she's in charge. Y'all sitting up here so preordained with how it works, you don't understand. It's situational. No. It's situational.
That's what he's saying, though, sister. Rashi, that's what he's saying, though. I think that sometimes we debate over semantics. That's what brother's saying.
And that's what I was about to say. I use some of these terms because it's known and we could fall into understanding. But in the relationship, when you start, you make those decisions. This is my position, my job duties, responsibility. And I really think if we look at stuff on a kind of a corporate structure of where things are supposed to be built and built up, we can be successful. It's crazy to put it that way, but sometimes it's a science, and science have rules to follow for you to be successful. So when you get together in the beginning, you make those things up. I'm good with this, but I'm better with you. You're good at this, I'm good at this. Even if it's separate roles, I've always, almost all the time, cook better than all my exes. So I had one relationship. The understanding was she bought all the groceries. I did all the cooking. That's something you have to talk about. We have to have conversation about our life and our future life, not just the moment we're living in. And this yellow idea is a waste of time.
Wait a minute, brother.
We have our
future. We have to have conversations.
not just about the present life, but our future goals and our future projections for ourselves. Now, that's a moment right there. Because, see, living in the moment, living in the moment is where we are. We've been living in the moment since we got here in this country, in the moment. What's next? But understanding that you have a future self and you're supposed to be making goals and realities for that, and where does this person you have chosen to date or court, where do they fit into not you now, but you that has to stay all night at the job? You that has to travel the world in order to get it done. You that is not you sitting at home right now, but you that is away. You understand? How do you prepare someone while you're dating and in love with them for a person that you will become in the future that you have projected for yourself?
I don't think you can, to be honest with you. I think that you give them as much of you as possible, but you continue to talk and you continue to date, meaning you both allow one another space for one another, meaning if you have a trip that you go on every year with your girls and we're together, that don't mean squat. Go on your trip. I don't need to go on your trip just because we're together. You don't stop your trip just because we're together. If you and your girls have an annual retreat that you've gone on for the past 15 years, by all means, take your ass home. I need you to have those experiences outside of us so you can bring that back to us so we can still have something to talk about that's fresh, that's new. You may have learned something different about yourself. You may have been able to share something new, or someone shared something new with them that you then looked at yourself and was like, oh, slap, you know, I could, I would, I like you, well, I will never do. So I think that's the only way you can
but Brother
do
Lee,
that.
But Brother Lee, I feel like what has happened with relationships is that it has become too technical. What she was stating is called a maturation or growing with someone. You don't necessarily map out how you grow. You grow.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
Like there is no syllabus on how we're going to grow together. We get in this, we make it happen. I say that because it's the sister who wrote this book, Diane Stewart. It's called Black Woman, Black Love, and I say, brothers, y'all should check this book out, read it, because it's not just for black women, it's for black folks in general. And what she always talks about is that black folks, we have always since the days in Africa had partnerships. We don't love like the colonials do. There's a different type of love, a cultural love for us than it is for white folks. So if you're basing how you're going to love someone, as Brother Rodney put in the chat, based off degrees, et cetera, you're not going to find that companionship because it's a little bit more complex when it comes to us. We don't value people usually when we're at our best off of a piece of paper to say you got these alphabets in front of your name or you make this X amount of money. That's not us at our best. That's not us at our purest. That's why brothers can go find that sister at Walmart and wipe her up right off the cash register and not think twice about her education or how much money she don't make. It's, yo, we got some chemistry here. I like the way she smiles. She stays on my mind, right? You get your infatuation stage, and then you build from there. You grow from there. And if you get at a point where it's an impasse that you can't go no further, you meet each other in the middle, you shake hands, and you go on. Part of it is called emotional maturity, and that's what we are lacking. And part of the reason why we lack it, because a lot of these self-help books, a lot of these self-help gurus and relationship gurus have it wrong. We got bitter people telling us how love should go. I said this before, and I'll say it again. Black women listening to Bell Hooks is crazy to me. Bell Hooks didn't even like brothers. She fell in love with a redneck white dude that she knew didn't like brothers in the first place. Now, she can't be the mother or the thought provoker of what we're talking about as far as relationships.
So let me jump in real quick. It's something that's been the undertone to this conversation was just brought up. And this, what I've been feeling that I've been understanding over the last few years is the cultural influences or, well, let me say it first, the societal influences to black culture and relationships. What you just said, brother, was very important, the fact that black people love differently. And that's something I don't think that we understand. I think that we've removed ourselves from it so far from the core of our culture because we've been influenced by what social media and the mainstream media and what TVs tell us black love is supposed to look like. Black love is spiritual, more than anything. So that's why, if men, again, if you look at when I mentioned earlier about the leadership aspect of it, men are supposed to be the spiritual leaders. This is why, like you just said, we can go fall in love with someone at the Walmart cashier and blow up with this person, right? We can elevate to another height with this person that the media or social media says that don't belong to us. And it's not because of what this person has. It's how this person compliments me, how this person is my partner, right? Whereas when you're chasing the titles, those things are superficial, obviously, and they don't hold any weight on our spirit. I don't spiritually connect with a master's degree. I don't spiritually connect with a BSN. I don't spiritually connect with the title CEO. I spiritually connect with the person. And if that person doesn't know who the hell they are to the core because they're saying that I am an RN or I have a master's degree or whatever, then we lose that connectivity and the relationships fail.
But there's a lot of people that have that mentality that who they are is a title based on what they have accomplished. They don't have their personality and who they are without those letters, as you put it, in front of their name. People put too much value on titles and levels in life in a social structure and how we live financially and what's important to the world. What's important to the world is not what's important to me and my family and my house. So how much degree, how much you accomplish, it's great for you. But what does it do for you outside of all those things? Who are you without those things? People don't identify in themselves who they are without those things.
Well, I continue to say, there's space for individual victories in a team sport. But if the team doesn't win, it doesn't matter. Because matter how well that player on that losing team plays, they will never get the MVP. That player could have got more sacks than somebody on the winning team. They could have individually scored more touchdowns than someone in the same position on the losing team. But if that team doesn't win, that player will never be the MVP. The MVP always goes to the winning team. So if the team isn't winning, your individual victories don't matter. However, there is space for individual victories in a team sport when the team is winning. Rodney, you've been quiet for a while. Go ahead, brother.
Actually, I was enjoying the direction of the conversation. As I was looking at thumbing through Sister Syreeta Ziegler's book and just kind of balancing some of the things that she was saying to what Brother Barry and some of the brothers were saying, and I think Brother Barry kind of hit the nail on the head. And one of the things I wish our sisters understood is that feminism, as they practice it today, came from European women who always saw black women through the historical lens as strong. So if we go back to the 50s and 60s, when today's feminism kind of created itself, that was white women looking at black women and seeing strength and power in relationship with their black men. That was white women looking at black women and seeing the freedom in their relationships with their men. And white women took that. They Europeanized it, bastardized it, and then falsely regurgitated back to us, and then we accepted it, and we've been stumbling ever since. So I think it's important for us to know that what we're doing isn't us, but what white women were trying to do was us because they saw the value in it. And maybe we should go back to what to the parts that worked that they took and messed up. And maybe that would help put us back on better relationship footing. And then the other thing that Brother Barry hit on that I wanted to just expound on a bit is, you know, we keep talking about this love thing. And we also in love have to realize that love, as we talk about it today, is a fairly new construct that was popularized by Americans, colonials. This isn't even, you know, you go back 300 years ago, and what we're talking about with this love thing associated with relationships didn't really exist. And we talked
like
about
what,
falling in love. I'm sorry?
What's specific about it? Like what?
The romanticizing of it. My heart flutter.
That's right.
Those types of
things. Because it's a family business. Your relationship with other people is your family's business. If your family had any power or any establishment or whatever social strata you on, your relationship is either going to uplift you out of your strata or it's going to double down on your power as a family. You're not free to you're free to fuck around, but you are not free to bond and marry on your own. It is for your family's empowerment. That is what it was. Now it's one man's geek on one woman's geek. It's just whatever y'all doing together. That's not what that was. This was a unification of nations sometime. This is one empire unifying with another empire at one time. This is just not a one man's idea. So
true,
when you keep doing
but
it,
part
and, you
of
keep,
the problem.
And you keep doing it over and over and over, her, it belittles the actual power of the union.
Well, I would say this, though. We keep on forgetting one major thing that we had to deal with chattel slavery in this country. And so our disposition as African Americans, I'm taking everybody on this phone, is a lot different than other folks that come to this country. And so we had the splitting of our marriages or our unions on the plantation. So we took it a little bit more serious when we were closer to that. That's why our grandparents and great-grandparents looked at marriage and unions a lot different than the way we do now. And so that's why we have a lot of the practice of what we once had. So we have to take that into consideration sometimes when we look at relationships, and we don't. We truly don't. We almost act as if we have arrived as equals with whites in this country. So what Brother Rodney is talking about is when you're taking white folks' ideology and you put this on black situations, this moment, it ain't going to match. And all you're doing is creating turmoil. And so we have to ask us, who thoughts are you thinking? That is the question that we must ask, whether it's love or anything else. Who thoughts are you thinking? Because when you really listen and you break it down to what we're trying to explain and what we're saying, sometimes it sounds like brothers say they want a white woman, and sometimes it sounds like black women say they want a white man.
Rodney, were you through? I'm sorry.
Oh, no, Brother Barry is, you know, he's swinging like, Willie McCovey. Remember the McCovey shift? That might be before some of your time, but. You know, everybody
knew
when he came up to bat, you needed to shift to just one side of the field because that's where the ball was going. That's where he was sending it.
Brother Rodney, of uniting nations through marriage is not European. This is early Africana ideology, okay? The idea of why we're being united. What I'm trying to explain to you is your relationship is not your own. It has a social weight on it. It has a genealogical weight on it. It has a financial weight on it. It has an educational weight on it. It has the weight of the struggle on it if you choose in and out of it. And when people say, I like her, it's not real.
when she says, I think he cute, it's already got the weight of colonialism on it. And so, like Brother Barry said, no, we are not making sound choices because of chattel slavery. But also, if we want to go back and fix anything because we are addressing that we don't make the right choices, I am a firm believer if you're going to unite, it should not be because you like her skin tone or her booty is 50 inches, Lee. It should be because the unification of these two finances, these two families, because you don't just get her. You get her and all her people. You get her people. You don't get one person.
Crazy cousin,
what you get is a, you get the cousin who's going to ask you for money. You get grandma. She needs you to come change her tire. You get her auntie who can cook real good macaroni. You get the whole unit in her. You get access to a whole unit. And so when you date and you start playing with these people knowing that you don't have their future in your interest, then it's malignant. It's not a good thing. It shows poor character. So I'm of the opinion that if you dating, serially dating, it's not because you want or looking for anybody. It's because you like manipulation of assets. You like having access to these people and all the people that they have access to, be it their money, their jobs, their body, their friends, their big booty friends. It's something about their reality that you're trying to get in on, or else you would be looking for something more substantial that would take more time.
I disagree with that. I disagree with that wholeheartedly because, unfortunately, my cousin Dan the Man Ringo broke this down to me almost 30 years ago. He broke down the theory of 10. The theory of 10 is as stated below. You need 10 women to get down to one reason. You will meet somebody. They'll seem to enjoy you. You'll seem to enjoy them. And quite quickly afterwards, you will realize that either you or they are full of shit. Then you'll meet somebody else. And it'll be the same type of scenario repeated time and time again. You'll have about, you'll get down to your final three, your final four, and realize like, yo, this, they are all cool. That, so you start really delving into them. And then you recognize and realize that you're just not compatible with one, if not two of them. Then you get down to your final two, and then you're faced with the decision. Do I really continue with both of them, or do I cut the cord with one and focus on another? You then sit back, you grab your counsel, because fellas, we'll talk about this, and once I get through with this speech here, you know, you grab your boys and you're like, yo, look, this is who I'm looking at, this is plus and minuses, and you all will talk and be like, yo, look, shorty was mad cool, but this is mad cool, but and then, you know, you step out of that and you make your final decision. But it took 10 just to get to one. And sadly, that is a harsh reality. You know, it has been repeated in my life several times, unfortunately. And even when you get down to the one, sometimes that just doesn't work out because then you're giving them all of you. And as a good friend of mine said, whom actually I'm hanging out with tonight, you know, it's very difficult to handle all of somebody and their true self for a lot of people, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, then that blows up and then you have to start all over again. And I wanted to say, fellas, because Rashi doesn't prescribe to this too much, do you have counsel with other men when you're going through something, when you're trying to make a decision, or any other time in your life? Are there cats that you call upon that you trust and, you know, you really allow to bend your ear, or they allow you to bend their ear? I'm going to start with you, cuz.
I'll say yes, in this different stages, right? Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, I can always call you, right, and talk. And there's other situations where I have, you know, homeboys who have experienced certain situations. And I know, you know, I recall it through them sharing it with me. So if I encounter certain situations, by all means, definitely there are some guys. But it's not a lot. And I think that's part of the problem that we have is that we don't have a continuous or robust network of men that we can lean on and help us navigate certain situations. You know, mentorship is something that we don't have in our community, and that's that's another conversation for another show. But by all means, it's something I think we're lacking as a culture.
Go ahead, Sharon.
Yes, I have a few people I could reach out to, and I have reached out during times, you know, in many different things. And even if it's just to hash out a decision that I've already made and just trying to figure out, I'm on the people that have known me at least 30 plus years or, you know, all my life. Because sometimes we have to be careful who we seek counsel from. And my father had, I went to my father with a situation one time, and he had already known what I was coming to talk to him about. And he was like, I can't counsel you on that because I've never been through that. And I took that as a warning because we went in further with that information, in that when you seek counsel that has experience. Because we might go to our boys because they're close and you know you can talk to them about anything, but if they don't have experience, then what are you getting? You know, your information is not going to be helpful to you. So seeking counsel, make sure you have experience.
You know, I always counsel with the brothers. I also speak counsel from the sisters as well. But I think that you also have to be mindful of the information that you get. It's still your responsibility to decipher. And so you have to make a decision. One of the things that I've learned in what I would say with my failure in my marriage was that I didn't know exactly how that successful people make sacrifices. And I feel like to be successful, even in a marriage or to get out of a marriage, you have to figure out, you know, what success, like, what do you want to be successful? What are you willing to give up? Sometimes you have to give up that relationship, or you have to give up other aspects outside of the relationship, right, if you want the relationship to be successful. And so that's what I got from a lot of the counsel that I was seeking from brothers. And I do believe that that's part of brotherhood, too. And one last aspect, you know, when Black Love was originally talked about in the 60s and 70s, it was really a talk about brotherhood. That's what Black Love originally was about brotherhood, more so than the relationship between black men and women. So that's something for us to think about as well.
Rodney?
So a few things. I wanted to go back to the chattel slavery part, and we often put our ills on slavery. And in this case, it's not black people who were the problem, because up until the 60s, black people were more likely to be married than white people. And black people in general weren't even allowed to be married but once they were free, they excelled at marriage. So I don't want us to have a false narrative, and that's what I believe it is, that black people have a problem or have always had a problem with marriage and committed relationships. That simply isn't true. Even after slavery, when black men had been separated from the woman that they had been with in a husband-wife relationship, though the owner might have sold them, there's plenty of stories of black men traveling miles and if not hundreds of miles looking for the woman that they were with. And in some cases, that's why you had black men with multiple families, is because they got sold from one plantation where they had a family and went to another plantation and was forced to have relations with another woman and have a family. But those black men, once they were free, tried to take care of both of those families. But the key part is when it comes to black men and black people in general in relationship, epitomize solid marriage. Something happened to us long after slavery that changed that. But I don't think that it is slavery on the part of black people that hinders us from being married today. So I did just want to throw some historical value into black people and marriage. And someone talked about mentorship in relationship. And the mentorship, which I'm not a fan of the word in the first place, but that tutelage in marriage came from the example of marriage in those closest to them, which again is since the 60s, something that we have fallen off on. So maybe that's not the case today, but maybe that should be the case. And that's something that, going back to what Sister Rashi was saying, is that when we get married, it is not just a person connecting with another person. It is family unit. It is the village unit. It's the people that's building on relationship. There's value in it. And so we have to make a concerted effort, men and women, that we need to be better at marriage. And we need to learn marriage. And if we're so divided, if we know what is and should be, then maybe this is something, if we're not able to teach it and demonstrate it in our homes, that it should be taught in a child's academic progression throughout their educational life. Because we're failing at it now, and maybe there aren't enough good role models. And one of the questions I put into the chat was simply that. Do we uphold marriage in the positive, or do we often talk about it in the negative? Because as we talk, it's as we have. As we do both is how we will go forth. So, again, nobody can fix that but us. And then the final thought on it is we keep talking a lot about love and not enough about commitment, because the commitment is the glue that holds it all together. The love, as we identify love today, because when we talk about love in a marriage, we're talking about agape love, which is like the highest form of love. So to a certain extent, I think we should set our bars high, but it's unrealistic because I think Brother Barry said it, when he's talking about the love of a child versus the love of adults. Yeah, children initially may have that agape love, but a very few adults have that. So should it be as much about love or about compatibility, what each person brings to it, the comfort with one another? So I would like for us to, instead of talking about falling in love so much, let's not just fall into commitment, let's develop the commitment for one another.
So I just want to rebut, because I stated in the chat, when I was talking about slavery, and this is sometimes what happens with us in this country, is that we kind of like try to wipe it out as if it, like, slavery is shameful. What I was saying was the commitment during the Reconstruction years of men going to find their families, and the reason why we took marriage so serious, that's why we got what we got in the 60s. So the 60s didn't just happen because it happened. It happened because we were closer to the plantation, and we understood that family was very vital for our survival. And so I definitely want to correct that part, because there's a lot of good things that our people did coming out of slavery. There's a lot of things that experience made us look at love and relationships and all, and commitment different. The other thing that I would say is, before you talk about commitment, let's talk about emotional maturity as well as mental and emotional toughness. Right? Because people get heartbroken and they just quit and give up. You can get heartbroken several times before you find love or the right person or the right commitment, or however you want to use the term, the eighth time. But we have to learn how to be tougher. A lot of us right now are emotionally wimps, and that's what we've been taught because we've been conditioned to be softer.
So, again, we're saying, so, yes, thank you for correct, because the way you stated it and the way I took it was, as many things are said about slavery, in the negative. Because of slavery, we are this negative thing. When in the reality, just like you put in the chat, slavery did not deter us. If anything, again, up until the 60s, black people were more likely to be married and in committed relationships. And even, well, up until the 2000s, black men were more likely to desire a long-term permanent relationship / marriage. And up to today, there are more black men married, at least 2010 anyway, there were more black men married than there were black women. And there's more black men who say that they want to be married, just like these two brothers here. There are more black men who say they want to be married than there are black women. And so these numbers, these statistics become important because we base a lot of our actions on falsehood. And we can see from 45 and to even Putin where falsehood can leave you. So we have to base this stuff on more fact and less on feelings or, once again, misinformation.
Well, I think you can go a little deeper, man. When you talk about the facts, is, you know, understanding why during slavery it was illegal for slaves to be married, right? When you understand the force that African Americans or Africans had, when you understand the power and the strength of the union for Africans and what that meant, you know, I think it's important for us to go back to the core today. Go back to the core on why things were, or why the decision was made, or it's synonymous to voting rights. Right? Why do you think that they're trying to take away voting rights? Why do you think during slavery it was illegal for slaves to be married? Why did the change happen in the 60s? I feel like it's just important to understand how great we were and how prosperous we were in those times, and it's also important to understand why that change in prosperity occurred, in order for us to grow and be better in the future.
Now, was that a statement or a question?
A little bit of both.
So,
well, I think
what I would actually like to do is for you to expound on that from your perspective.
So, again, it goes back to the spirituality and the connectivity that black folks possess. I feel like, in my opinion, we're superheroes, right?
Oh, say that again.
We're superheroes. We're the superpower. And it's not about race. It's about our spiritual connection to the earth and what we can do if we are united in every front, in every aspect. So, long story short for me, you can't tell us we can't be in the union now. So, going back to the 60s, you have things like the the Welfare Act, right? You had the Welfare Act that's enacted that pretty much deters black families from being together, you know, when you institute things like welfare and all those good things like that, that people that we thought was going to be, was about fair and being fair and equitable, right? We thought that having welfare and having these benefits would help us, but in order for you to qualify for these things, you can't have the father in a home.
Stop, guys.
You can't have the father in a home. So if you can't have the father in the home, there goes the marriage. There goes the union. But why is that a mandate for a benefit that's supposed to help us economically? And again, when you look at back during that time, not necessarily present day, because present day white folks are more, they're probably just as utilize welfare just as much as African Americans. But when you look at during that time, that was a bone that was kind of given to us for society to keep weakening the strength of the black community. And again, same thing for during slavery times, but a different tool was used. You use the fear, the whip, you know, murders and all the other the horrific acts that were bestowed upon Africans at that time. Why do you think the union, I mean, again, that for me, the union was the biggest thing to keep us strong. Us having that union equated to strength. If you take away the core of the superpower, if you take away the core of the superhero, then you defeat the superhero. So that's why, in a nutshell, it's a lot of different ways that conversation can go. But in a nutshell, that's the reason why I feel like that's been the attack on the black community as far as the union is
concerned. You are hitting it out of the park, because what they're telling us and what they did with the Moynihan Report was they understood that the black power movement could not exist without the black family.
Right.
And that's pretty much the source. If you take away a man's reasoning to fight, he will put his guns down. A man's
right.
reasoning to fight is usually his family. So when you don't see
it's
men on the front lines... It is
it's
our
not
reason
even our
to
reason
live.
To fight. It's our reason to live. Like, that is the core of our superheroes, of our superpowers. Like,
you're right.
I never cried as much as I cried when I lost my kids. You know what I'm saying? Like, not losing them and, you know, permanently. Like, when that change occurred in my life, I'm weakened. You know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
I don't know who I am. I can't recognize who I am. I don't see myself the same in the mirror until I get that back. Right, and you know, and having children and being divorced, there's a process, and in that process, I'm at my most vulnerable state. I can't think straight, I can't look straight, I can't see straight, I can't walk straight, because the core is gone. Now, when that core is restored, then I'm restored. When that core is restored, then I'm building again. I got my mind right, you know. And Rashi, you know, to answer your question, that's what happened. I went through that. I went through that marriage. I was Mr. Dad, you know what I'm saying, or Mr. Mom, I should say. And to lose that, it broke me, right? And it took some time for me to get that back and for me to restore or revive my superpower, right? And when I regained that, there's another process in order for me to start putting those actions into place, and actually start to see the results of that power being restored. So, absolutely, to break the union up the way the core of the superhero, which is us.
We have like 2 minutes left in the show. I wanted to use this time to respectfully thank everybody for their time. Again, a very good conversation. I appreciate everybody for joining in. I know it's earlier for some than others, but I appreciate you all getting up and rocking with us today. This is definitely the culmination of, still not the culmination. I got to stop saying that, because we need to get one another together and really finish this off. But it was definitely good to have the other side, because the sister showed up and they showed out last week. So we definitely want to get the brothers in this week. Sharon, you have any final comments?
Yeah, I wanted
short.
To say we – as a whole, fixate on marriage as a term too much. There's, in my life, I've experienced committed relationship over 40 years, lived together, so in essence became common law. I've experienced people wanting to be together but couldn't live together, that actually went and bought house opposite street just so they could still be together. They'll never marry. Kids came out of it from both sides, where there was, I don't think they individually had children together, but commitment is more important. The dedication and commitment is what we need to train our kids and our fellow members, because without that, no marriage is going to be successful. We use the term marriage as the title and how it's recognized, but as a union, committed union between two people, it exists more than the numbers state, and we need to recognize that, learn from that.
Well, I said short, and he went long, so he ate up everybody's time. Look, love you all. Be good. Be safe. Until next week. Peace.
Peace.